into our third session of our Tuesday mornings, looking at the true cause of disease. We've looked at our cycle of life, or carbon cycle, and also having a look very clearly that the germs aren't causing the disease, they're the result of something. And that's why Ellen White says in page 127 of Ministry of Healing, in case of sickness, the cause should be ascertained. Mm-hmm. Well, how do you ascertain the cause? You ask questions.
Yes.
You ask a lot of questions. And remember what we're looking at? History. We're looking at symptoms. But of course, you're not going to get the response till you start advising or implementing different things. And as you do the history, what's your guideline? Your guideline is the eight laws. So if someone's dehydrated, we know straight away there's one problem. And if someone's going to bed at midnight every night, there we have another problem. So you see, your laws are your guidelines. And when I first started doing this, my husband wanted to start his own health retreat, and I am a mum homeschooling with kids, and I'd helped other mothers because I'd been, you know, using natural remedies on my children for a while. And we started the health retreat, and my 17-year-old daughter was a massage therapist. She'd already done a course. My 15-year-old daughter, she'd been cooking since she was about 13, and she was 15, so she was the cook. My husband's daughter, Michaela, she's very good typist. So at the age of, I think it was 12, she became Michael's secretary. And our three boys, who were 11, 13 and 14, they were the gardeners. So we had a team. And the good thing about having the kids as the team, you don't have to pay them at first. And I said to Michael, who'll be the health director? He said, you. I said, no, I'm just a mother that helps other mothers. He said, no, you'll be good. And he walked out of the room. Oh, right. And I know that all God's biddings are his enablings. And whatever he asks you to do, if you do it with an open heart, a teachable heart, a humble heart, he is able. In fact, he is able to do exceedingly, abundantly, above all that we ask or think, according to the power that worketh in us. And so that's how I started. And I really did not feel that I knew much at all. I didn't feel at all qualified or able to do this. And so when I would consult, that's how I would consult. I would go through their history, ask them about their childhood, ask them what their symptoms were, and then little by little go through the laws. How much water do you drink? And by the time you've done all that, you start to get an idea of of why the problem is like that. And so what I've always done is the glaring problems that you deal with them. There's your symptoms. Your symptoms. That's what, and as we go through this medical missionary training school, I endeavour to say that all your questions will be answered, and we will pack that out and you'll see it in more detail. But what I wanted to touch with you now was, how do you get the yeast or fungus out of the body? Now, there are four ways it can get in. Skin, don't touch it. Don't ever touch it. If there's a moldy orange in your fruit bowl, you put a glove on, or you put your hand in a paper bag and get it and screw it round, or get tongs, don't touch it, because your skin will absorb it. So your skin, you can inhale it. It's about the only time I know you should wear a mask. Is if there's a mouldy area. I know some ladies who've, a couple of ladies, single mothers, children are starting to go to school, they've got to earn a living, and they've become green cleaners. There's a real demand today for green cleaners. Cleaners who'll only use natural products. Mm-hmm. And if you can't afford to buy all the fancy biodegradable ones, vinegar, sodium bicarbonate. Yeah, vinegar and sodium bicarbonate. And if it's really stubborn, put them together. You'll get a nice fizzy reaction and get the scrubbing brush into there. And then to make the bathroom smell so nice, have some lavender essential oil or eucalyptus oil. Put it on a cloth, wipe the whole bathroom down. And when the lady comes in, she'll go, oh, it looks so nice and it smells, you know, ladies and smells. But I know one lady, I was in their area and she told me that's she was able to make a living there. She just put an ad in the paper, green cleaner. Mm-hmm. Saw her a year later, she said, I've got three girls working for me now. But the reason me telling you that is, if you go into a bathroom and it is black with mold, you know what you do? You turn around and say, sorry, you'll have to get someone else for that job. Now, don't expose yourself. It might take half an hour to get in and it might take 10 years to fully get out. Okay, so protect your body. That's the middle law is temperance, not taking anything into the body that will harm it and taking in moderation the good things. So skin, breathing, ingestion. Don't eat anything that has mold on it. Sometimes people cut off the moldy bit and eat the other. Well, I can tell you it's all through. It doesn't get to the mold where you see the mold till the final stage. Rice. Be very careful of rice. In the book, one of the books I've got, it's called Mycotoxins and Their Effect on Human and Animal Health. And it cites in there that in the 1920s there was an epidemic of cardiac beriberi, which is a heart condition, all through Asia. And they traced it to the mold on cooked rice. So in 1921, you might like to write this down because this is a really important piece of information. And I like telling things that takes only 30 seconds to tell, but it tells a whole lot. In 1921, Japan passed the Rice Act. And the Rice Act put stringent rules on the storing and the keeping of cooked rice. So if you go to Asia today, you'll never get yesterday's rice. So the rule stated that rice had to be cooked fresh every day. Now, if you want to make fried rice, you cook the rice in the morning, make the fried rice at lunch. You want to make sushi, cook the rice in the morning, make the sushi for lunch. Never the next day. So when I go to a church function on Sabbath, I never eat the rice dishes. Now what we do at our church, we'll put the church rice in a slow cooker early Sabbath morning, and then it's just nice for lunch. If you cook too much, you could freeze it, but don't use it the next day. Now, there are two things that are very susceptible to mold growth. One is peanuts and one is cooked rice. And remember, it's there before you see it. And I had one man, young man, only 30, and he had health issues, and I'm going through everything. I couldn't see anything that I could falter. Yet his energy levels were down. And I mentioned rice. He said, oh, I cook a pot of rice and I eat it all week. I said, aha. Aha. Because as you will see, mold, fungus live in an anaerobic environment. Ladies, you'll want to hear this. You can talk later. Sorry, I don't want you to miss out one thing. If you want to talk, write down what you want to talk about and you can talk in your break. So, did you hear that? Fungus, yeast and mold, they thrive in an anaerobic environment. You know what that means? No oxygen. And so when they're active in the body, the energy levels are low. very low. It's not the only sign of low energy, but it is one of the signs of low energy. And we're going to be exploring that in more detail. So these are anaerobic. That's why you want lots of air coming into your compost bin. Put the stalks in, because you want to encourage more aerobic and not anaerobic organisms. And so you can get fungus into your body through your skin, through your lungs, through ingestion. We don't use any peanuts at all. And I'm sure most people are familiar with the China study. Mm-hmm. Dr. Colin Campbell, he shows very clearly children were dying of they were dying of liver cancer between the ages of 8 and 10 years of age. And he was the researcher that had to go and search this out. And he discovered peanut butter. Every jar of peanut butter had aflatoxin in it. The mold is Aspergillus. The mold waste from Aspergillus is aflatoxin. And aflatoxin directly affects the liver, whereas the mold and mold waste that was in Asia on the cooked rice directly affected the heart. And you'll see that in my book. I go into a little bit more detail in that. And there are books that you can search out that will go into even more detail with that.
So it wouldn't happen if it's a good quality and organic.
Would it happen if it was a good quality organic peanut butter? Yes, it would. So you think about this. The peanuts are not a nut. They're a legume. They grow in the ground and they mold very easily. So what happens in Australia, 75% of Australians live in the city. All their food's grown out in the country. It's harvested. It's put in silos. You get a cold, frosty morning and a hot, sunny day. What's happening in the silo? You see that moisture build up, and that's when the mold growth happens. So I have a friend, and he had a friend who did a thesis on mycotoxins, mold waste. And he did his thesis in Kingaroy, which is in Queensland in Australia. And you know what they grow in Kingaroy? Peanuts. That's where he did his study, where they grow the peanuts. If you grow peanuts and harvest them straight away and either slowly roast them or boil them, I would endeavour to say they're free of the aflatoxin. But it's very hard, yeah.
What heart conditions can develop from the mould in rice, as you said?
Well, they called it cardiac beriberi. Mm-hmm. And basically it was a heart condition where the heart didn't function properly.
So arrhythmia, for example?
It may be, but there can be a few reasons for heart arrhythmia. We're going to study the heart, and you will see that in one of our lectures.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
So four ways it can get in is skin, inhalation, ingestion, and sexually transmitted. All sexually transmitted diseases have a myco prefix or a fungal base. AIDS is a fungus. But then the million-dollar question really is, how do we get it out? How do we get it out of the body? Number one, starve. Remember, these are opportunist organisms, and they're just going to live around where they're getting well fed. So how do you starve it? Number one, you've got to turn the tap off. You've got to make sure there is no mold in your house. So sunshine, what does sun do to mold? Wipes it out. That's why the sun should be coming into the houses. Fresh air, fans on. Yes?
What's about if there's some mold in the cellar?
Mold in the cellar? Mm-hmm. You've got to eliminate that mold. My daughter has a cellar. She lives in Wisconsin. And she has a machine that takes the water out of the air. Mm-hmm. And she has that constantly on. Fans are good. Keep that air moving. And also, you've got to make sure that your cellar is well drained.
If it's a problem, it's not so good.
Because that can be the cause of many diseases. I met a lady in the US. She said we had to destroy our house, and it came from the cellar. She said every member of the family had illness, and it was different in different people. One son had sinus, another one had asthma, She was getting headaches all the time, and yet they were all expressions of mold going into their body. So they found out that it was the basement, and they had builders come and assess, and they just said, the house has to be destroyed. And that's what the Bible says, if there's mold in the house, it has to be destroyed because it can kill you. You know what's interesting in the Bible, if you look at the Old King James Version, which is the one that I have, it says green and red streaks. And yet in the NIV it's called mildew. So mildew in the house, the Bible says, clean out the mortar, clean the house, re-mortar it, shut the house up for 2 weeks, and then the priest has to come and assess. And if it's grown back, the Bible says the whole house has to be dismantled and taken out to an unclean place outside the city. You can check it out in Leviticus. And so let's go to, they call it leprosy in the house, green and yellow streaks. Leprosy in the clothes. They call it mildew again. And the Bible says burn it. Clothes have to be burnt, or the mattress, if it's got mold in it, it has to be burnt. So let's go to leprosy on the skin. Now, if they were using the same word, it would be mildew on the skin, because it is the same word in the Hebrew. But they call it infectious skin disease. But leprosy is actually a fungal disease. Interesting. So you've got to starve. No exposure at all. And let's go inside the body. What's fungus's favourite food? Sugar and yeasts. Yeah. We have a book in our library by an oncologist called Dr. Tullio Simoncini, Italian oncologist. I think he's in jail at the moment. He was having 90% success rate with cancer, and he was injecting sodium bicarbonate straight into the cancer. You see, sodium bicarbonate is alkaline, and when you inject sodium bicarbonate, it gives a wave of alkalinity, and cancer loves an acid environment and it can't survive. So no wonder he was having such success. So obviously he had a patient who was probably advanced stages and died. My husband said if only he'd injected him with chemotherapy, he wouldn't have gone to jail. Can you see the point? And he's on a charge of manslaughter. Just incredible. But his book, because that's one of the complaints about me, is that I quote a disgraced oncologist, which is Dr. Tullio Simoncini. And my husband said, Barb, it's probably better that you don't quote him. But I do, because he was having such great results. And I do not believe, in my eyes, he's not disgraced. It's just that it was most unfortunate one of his patients died. That's all he did was inject sodium bicarbonate in. Did you know that the stomach lining makes sodium bicarbonate? Did you know that your pancreas makes sodium bicarbonate to alkalize the acid, stomach acid that comes through into the duodenum? And we'll look at that when we go through on the journey through the gut. So it's a naturally occurring substance. Doesn't Ellen White say not to use sodium bicarbonate? To raise cakes. And I really believe she's talking about people who are having cakes 2 or 3 times a day raised with sodium bicarbonate. Would I have advised drinking with sodium bicarbonate? Only if the person had throat cancer and they could gargle with it. Only if the person had stomach cancer and then they would drink it early in the morning. And then they would drink it before they go to bed. Because the only part in our body that should be acid is the stomach. And you don't want to neutralize your stomach acid. But it's only acid. The hydrochloric acid is only produced when you smell or think food. Then it starts to be produced to break down your protein. So I don't advise drinking sodium bicarbonate. But Dr. Emma Fields, a Canadian doctor, she gave me a recipe for the sodium bicarbonate wraps. And that's 2 kilos of sodium bicarbonate and 5 liters of hot water. And what we do is we dunk towels in it. There's also half a cup of lemon juice in there. We wring it out, and then bit by bit we cover the whole body with these hot towels. A person can have fungus in their body but not have cancer. But if it continues to stay and it's well fed, then it certainly can grow into cancer. Cancer loves. Now, it's important to know what cancer loves so that we don't go there. Cancer loves glucose. So when we get someone wanting to conquer cancer, we give them a very low glucose diet. No fruit, no honeys, no even natural sugars at all. What do they eat? Lots of vegetables. Lots of legumes, nuts and seeds. All of those foods are very low glucose. And that helps to starve it, because cancer cells consume 15 times the glucose of any other cell. A lady contacted me, she said, Barbara, did you hear that they're doing research in America at the moment showing that cancer cells consume 15 times the glucose? Cancer cells thrive in an anaerobic. So cancer loves an anaerobic environment. And you know what my response was to her? I'm so glad they're doing that, but did you know that in 1942, Professor Otto Warburg got a Nobel Prize for discovering that? This is 1942. But you probably know that when the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers came in and funded the cancer research to go to chemotherapy, radiotherapy, and surgery, then a lot of things were lost then. So cancer loves glucose, it loves an anaerobic environment. So that's why we want to give it lots of oxygen. So coming back to starve it, so starve it by a special diet. We usually advise people go on a no fruit diet, no sweeteners at all for 6 weeks. They can have variety. Some people make Monday black-eyed bean day, Tuesday lentil day, Wednesday tofu day, Thursday cannelloni bean day, Friday kidney bean day. You can have a nice variety by doing that. And there's many different ways you can do legumes. I went to Punjab, India a few years ago. I was there for 5 days teaching. And the Hindus that asked me to come, they said, what will we feed you? I said, dal. I love dal. So I had dal at 9 in the morning and I had dal at 3 in the afternoon every day. No two were the same. So I had 10 dal meals. Different legumes, different flavourings, different vegetables. There's so much you can do. And that makes it a bit more exciting for the person that's chosen to give their body the conditions for conquering cancer. Number two, kill. I do think we've got to get away from the kill mentality, but there are herbs that will kill fungus and won't kill you. Isn't that good news? So we've got garlic. In my book, Self Heal by Design, I define this. We've got garlic. We've got olive leaf extract. And the other one is grapefruit seed extract. Not grape seed extract, grapefruit seed extract. You've also got a South American herb called podiaco. Now, you don't use all your ammunition at once. What we do is we alternate. Garlic for 2 weeks, olive leaf extract for 2 weeks, grapefruit seed extract for 2 weeks, podiaco for 2 weeks. And maybe oregano, it's a strong one. It's so strong that you've got to start with about 1 drop 3 times a day. Go to 2 drops 3 times a day.
Oregano oil.
Yeah, essential oil. Whenever you see essential oils, you know they're very, very strong. That's why they're very, very expensive, because you don't need much.
Is it too strong for the body to handle, or is it too strong for the taste?
Body. Alternate. That's what we usually do. So these herbs will kill fungus and won't kill you. Number three, alkalize. Because cancer loves acid. And we will be defining acid alkaline in another lecture. I have many books in my library of people who've conquered cancer, and I like to look at the common denominators, because some people advise apricot kernel seeds, some people advise IV vitamin C, you know, there's a whole lot of different treatments, there's fever treatments, and it can get very confusing. So I like to go to the common denominators. These are the common denominators. Cancer loves glucose, it loves an anaerobic environment, and it loves acid. So we want to do what cancer hates. So what does cancer hate? Cancer hates alkaline. Cancer hates oxygen. And cancer hates low glucose. The body will heal itself if you give it the right conditions, and we've seen people heal from cancer just with these basic conditions. So how do we alkalize? Green drinks. Now, do you remember I said don't drink sodium bicarbonate, it's not going to alkalize your tissues. It only alkalizes what it touches. So if you've got stomach cancer and drink it, it'll alkalize that. And if someone's got colon cancer, they can have an enema and put it up there. But green drinks, when you drink them, it goes into the tissues, it alkalizes. Because as you'll see in another lecture, I'll show you in detail, green drinks are very high in the alkaline minerals. So what we do at Misty Mountain, we gather wild greens, pumpkin tops, all the edible herbs. We usually do four herbs a day. We always add stinging nettle. You got stinging nettle here?
Yes.
It's got more minerals than most.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The good news is you don't have to eat it raw. Mm-hmm. But if you cook it, it limps it and you can eat it, or you can juice it. Yeah. We blend it with water and strain it. We always put a lot of mint in so it tastes a bit better. It's like drinking liquid grass. You strain it, so you're just drinking the liquid. And we make it fresh every morning. So it really hasn't, you know, deteriorates if you keep it too long, yes?
How much should you eat, should you drink?
Well, what we advise our people who are coming to conquer cancer is on the juicing days, they have four glasses. And on the eating days, so they can get everything in, it's usually three glasses.
That's for a whole day.
And yeah, and that's three glasses. That's 250 mil, are you mil? Or ounce?
Mil,
250 mil. They're 250 mil glasses. The other we do, and not everyone has this, but by God's grace, we have one at the moment. It's a hyperbaric chamber. And a hyperbaric chamber puts oxygen under pressure. So, it's like a blow-up tent, circular tent, and you zip it, and then the oxygen comes into pressure. Henry's law states that more gas goes into liquid under pressure. So it's Henry's law. And the gas is pure oxygen, and of course the liquid is our blood. Yes. And they cost about $25,000, so not everyone has them. We were able to get one a little cheaper because a man had got it for his wife and she passed away and he was selling it a little cheaper. We charge $90 a treatment. So that might be out of reach of most, and that's certainly understandable. So how are we going to oxygenate the body? Exercise several times a day. Number three, the other alkalizer, is the sodium bicarbonate wraps. This is quite an intense treatment. And the good news, because of Dr. Thomas's cameraman, it's up on YouTube, and it's demonstrated. Sodium bicarbonate wraps. And now, what? I'll give you the story of Elizabeth Cott, who came to us with three tumours in her abdomen, and the doctor said she had to have chemo immediately. She was late 50s at the time. She decided not to, and she saw a DVD of mine on cancer, so she booked into Misty Mountain. We immediately started to implement all this. We didn't have the hyperbaric treatment at the time. She stayed 2 weeks, so we did 5 reps a week. We usually go for 1 hour. Person's wrapped up for 1 hour. She had the green drinks every day, and she alternated the different herbs, and she had a lot of vegetables and legumes, nuts and seeds. She went back to the doctor 3 months later and he said, just keep what you're doing and come back and see me in 6 months. Now, what had he said to her in the first visit? You've got to have chemo immediately. So I went to the blood test, all her levels had come back to normal. She went back, so this is about a year later, she went back and one of the tumours had totally gone. And I think it took maybe another 10 months, another tumour has totally gone. And she said to me, she said, I have never felt so good. I think she's 70 now. She said, I've lost weight. She said, I don't have to have the sleep apnea machine with me anymore. I'm off all my medication. She's actually giving little cooking classes and meetings. She is Polish. She said, I used to make all the desserts at church. And she used to make this dessert called pavlova. It's like a meringue. And she said, I would make one this big. You know, it's sort of hard on the outside, soft in the middle. It's just egg whites and sugar. And I think they fill it with cream and fruit, something like that. She said, I would make a pavlova this big, 16 cups of white sugar. She said, I believe that I was just feeding my cancer with these sugar desserts. So at church today, when they say, Elizabeth, can you make a dessert? Can you make a pavlova? She said, I love you too much to make that one. She said, I'll make an apple strudel for you. And you can certainly make healthy apple strudels. Now, the Healthcare Complaints Commission claim that she's a fictitious person. So we said, here's her phone number. I said to her, did anyone ring her? She said, no. But we've seen some quite incredible turnarounds. How does she eat now? Well, after 6 weeks of no fruit, she went to low fruit. She went to just grapefruit and maybe Granny Smith apples. After another 2 months, she started to implement some berries, very low sugar fruits. We've seen a few stories like that. So when I was at the retreat in England, they said, you know, it's against the law to treat cancer. Well, we never treat cancer. You see that? You never treat it. All you do is teach. You're just saying the body's amazing. If you give it these conditions, it responds. That's all you're saying. So you can never be taken down. The only reason I was really banned is because of my husband's political party. We realise that now. They had an agenda. Even though Fat found nothing wrong, they'd obviously got orders to take me down. So that's what happened. But I think you'll be safe because Your husband's not Michael O'Neill. So when he was going into this, a journalist said to him, "Are you prepared to lose all your money, your business, your house, your reputation?" And Marcus said, "I'm not 30. I'm in my 60s. Yep." But he wasn't prepared that they'd take me down. And what God is looking for is men and women who will stand. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So one of the most powerful ways to stimulate a healing response in the body is to stop eating. So at our retreat, we always do 2 days on juices. We found it's much better for rapport with the guests, for everything, if when they come, you have a nice meal. So when they come in Sunday, there's a very nice meal. And we'll be defining food a little bit more as we go through this. So there's a very nice meal served for them. And then at night, we just give them broth. Broth is a lot of vegetables cooked in a lot of water. And I'm sure, Casper, you cooked a lot of them while you're at Misty. A lot of vegetables and a lot of water, always stinging nettle. That gives a lot of minerals. And then after cooking for 4 or 5 hours, it's strained. And then we put Celtic salt in. And the guests have that at night because they have a steam sauna in the afternoon. And when you have a steam sauna, you perspire out a lot of waste. But you also perspire out some minerals. So that mineral-rich drink at the end of the day is putting more minerals back. So as your body, 1,200 calories to digest a meal. That's what it takes. So when you're not digesting, your body's energies is looking for something to do. Because it doesn't have to digest a meal. And so what it looks for is something to do. And it's like in what can be happening, I don't know, when I'm at home on a holiday, I go to the parts of my house that I don't go to every day. You know, every day you sweep the floor and you wash the dishes and you wash the clothes. But then when you've got extra time, you go to those other areas. And that basically is what the body does. And I go to the area that's bugging me the most. In fact, the last time I had time at home, I pulled the bookcase apart and got rid of all the books that I don't really want there. I've read them. They're all right. They're not great. But the ones that, you know, are very good, I'll keep. So this area, and it will be different in different people. Maybe you'll clean out the garden shed. Maybe you'll clean out the kitchen cupboards. I don't know. But what your body does, it knows where to go, yes?
Regarding the broth cooking for 4 to 5 hours, we know as yet that you get the ideal taste after 4 hours. I was just wondering if the minerals will deteriorate, kind of like when you're making salt, you lose some of the minerals in the process of heating up the sea salt, you know?
Yeah, it's more the evaporation that loses the... But that's a very good question, and I've got some very good news for you. No matter how long you cook the vegetables, you never lose the minerals. The minerals all go into the water.
Mm-hmm. So there are more minerals if it's raw, if you eat the raw.
Nope. No. Same amount. What you do lose with cooking vegetables is the vitamin C, is some of the vitamins.
The vitamins.
Yeah, but you never lose the minerals. And the problem with salt is they don't wait till all the water's being evaporated. They just scoop the first minerals off, which is sodium chloride. So heating doesn't destroy minerals. That's the good news. So as your body has a rest from digestion, now it goes to restoration, regeneration. But before it will restore or regenerate, it's got to clean the house first. You would never go into an old house and paint a dirty wall, would you? No, it's got a clean house first. And so we have organs of elimination, and these organs of elimination have certain needs. And the largest organ of elimination is the skin. And Dr. Kellogg called the skin's pores millions of little sewers. Sewers, throwing off waste. The skin does three things. It'll absorb, that's why you have to be careful what you touch. It breathes, That's why I never totally cover your skin. It breathes. That's why I'd be very careful to put natural fibre next to your skin, because it's breathing. And it also throws off waste. What an incredible piece of creation is the skin. And the skin has certain needs. It needs to breathe. That's why we need to shower every day. Every day, wash the body's waste off. Every day we need to shower or bath. Be careful on the creams or anything you put on your skin. It must be made out of natural fibre. And the three fabrics to be especially cautious of, because they're made out of chemicals, is polyester, nylon and acrylic. Polyester, nylon and acrylic are really chemical fabrics. Whereas viscose, Modelle and rayon are made out of wood pulp. But when you buy them, please wash them and put them on the clothesline for a day, because they use a chemical process to soften the wood. But if you wash them and put them on the line, that gets those chemicals out and you're left with the wood. So be mindful of letting your skin breathe. Your skin also needs exercise, because when you exercise, you increase the circulation of the blood to the skin, and when you increase the circulation of the blood to the skin, you increase the skin's ability to throw off waste. It intensifies it. That's why the best time to have a shower is after your morning walk. What I do, I always have a hot shower at night before I go to bed. But in the morning, I run up and down hills at home and then I dive in the creek. So that's my morning wash, is the creek. And then if I'm gardening and it gets very hot, I'll have another swim on my way home from the garden. It is the best. When you're hot and sweaty and dirty, diving in that beautiful mountain stream, very nice. So that brings us to water. We need water in. We need 8 to 10 glasses of water a day. If you're as big as me, you can get away with 8. If you're bigger than me, a little bit more. And out. So this is water on the outside. So this can be the steam sauna at the retreat, helping to... Our steam sauna is by the creek. So we have... I don't understand it, but... We build a fire and it has pipes or something and comes into the little hut and creates steam. And then we dive in the creek, back in the steam sauna, into the creek. When you give the skin the right conditions, 80% of body's waste can come out of the skin. That's incredible, isn't it? Actually, forgive me, it's 70. 70% of body's waste can come out via the skin. So what's the right conditions? It's making sure you're well hydrated. As I say to our guests, you can't hydrate yourself half an hour before the steam bath. You've got to start early in the morning and little by little by little, all through the day, hydrate your body. So 70% of body's waste is eliminated via the skin when you're well hydrated and able to have these steam saunas. Another organ of elimination is your lungs. And your lungs need fresh air. Obviously, out here, there's lots of fresh air because those trees are giving off oxygen. So you've got to be careful in your house. Investigate your pillows, your mattresses. If you see when you buy a pillow today, it's got a date on it. Because when people perspire at night, it'll often go into the pillow and that can be a breeding ground for mold. So try and put your pillows in the sun every wash day. And we should be washing our sheets weekly. Every week we should wash our sheets. And the sheets should be natural fibre. I bought some sheets recently. They're very nice. They're 50% linen and 50% Modelle. Oh, they're very nice sheets. I'm always looking for good sheets on special because they can be very expensive. So cotton sheets, of course, are great. So make sure natural fiber in your bedding. So try and have wool blankets, feather blankets. We have also wool quilts on our guest beds. So be careful of that because all this can affect your breathing fresh air in at the night. And if there's carpet in the bedroom, that should be ideally vacuumed a couple of times a week. Not many people pull their bed out and vacuum a couple of times a week. Now, if you had a bed that had wooden floor, you look after 4 days, there's dust building up under the bed on the wooden floor. Well, that dust is building up in the carpet. You just can't see it because it's in the carpet. So all of these things are affecting your fresh air. Lungs also need you to exercise. Now, this piece of information I'm about to give you, I got from an anatomy and physiology book, and I think it's a very important one to give your guests. Right at the moment, we're breathing in 500 mil and we're breathing out 500 mil. But when you exercise, when you get to breathing very deeply, because you've just got to the top of a hill, or even halfway up a big hill, you're breathing in 3,600 mil of air and you're breathing out 3,600 mil of waste. What a difference. So usually it's 500 mil in, right now it'll be 500 mil in, 500 mil out. But when you exercise extremely, you're breathing in 3,600 mil. And you're breathing out 3,600 mil of waste. I just read it in the anatomy and physiology book. See how you're using science? And science will back your cause. So exercise is vital for lung health. Lungs also need water because there is a minuscule droplet of water in every alveoli. And we have 3 million alveoli, 300 million alveoli in our lungs. That's incredible, isn't it? Yeah?
What types of filth is getting out of the lungs?
Carbon dioxide mostly.
Yeah.
Carbon dioxide is the gaseous waste from when we're from in the cell. And I'm going to start going into the cell in more detail tomorrow. Mm-hmm. So in the cell, you will see that... glucose and oxygen combust together, giving off carbon dioxide waste. So it's mostly carbon dioxide that's coming out. And if carbon dioxide builds up in your blood because you can't get rid of it quickly enough, it creates an acid environment, so then we get another reaction there. And that's why breathing in, that's what you're breathing in when you wear a mask. That's why masks are not good. So here's your alveoli, they're like this, and there's a little droplet of water in every alveoli. And because of the surface tension of water, you know what I mean by the surface tension of water? Have you ever looked on a little lake and seen little creatures walking on the water?
Yeah.
It's because of the surface tension of water they can do that. And how we wash our hair is we put some shampoo that breaks the surface tension of the water and allows us to wash our hair. Because of the surface tension of water, when you breathe out, that alveoli collapses, so all your carbon dioxide can go out, and when you breathe in, you get a better quota of oxygen. If you're dehydrated and those little droplets of water are barely there, your little alveoli don't totally collapse and you can't get your full quota of oxygen. So very simply, the more water, the more oxygen you can get in. Kidneys. Your kidneys filter the blood and they're also an organ of elimination, and your kidneys need adequate water, because it's much more difficult for your kidneys to filter thicker blood. Best blood thinner in the world is water. But with that water, we also need to be having the whole salt. That's the Celtic salt. Celtic salt contains 82 minerals. We'll be looking at salt in detail later in the week. Himalayan salt has 75 minerals. Because your blood is salty, your perspiration salty, I'm sure none of us are interested in tasting our urine, but it will be a little salty. So you're losing salts.
But what about plastic waste? Plastic waste in the oceans.
Plastic waste in the ocean.
Sea salt.
What's the good news is that all heavy metals and chemicals, they usually sink. So it's more the seaweeds and the plants. That's why the worst food to eat is your oysters, your crabs, your lobsters, prawns. Now, of course, I don't eat that, but the people you will be dealing with in your health retreats may.
Yeah.
So it's important to have that knowledge. And the sea's constantly pounding, which is purifying the water. But there is a lot of waste dumped in the oceans today. That is true.
I don't understand why Himalayan salt has 75, I guess. Because it must have come from the sea before.
Well, some is lost in the process, and some is even lost in the being in the mountains. So, different things like that. Yes.
One more question about the salt. Do you use Celtic salt for every meal, or do you use it just particularly one time a day?
I take a little crystal before every glass of water, and I also put it very liberally on my potatoes, my salad, on everything I eat. And because it's a balanced salt, it works with the body. Because seawater is 92 minerals, and seawater is called an isotonic solution because it is the exact same mineral balance and proportion as is found in all body fluids. All body fluids, as one writer called it, he called it the internal ocean. And Dr. Robert Thompson, in his book The Calcium Lie, he believes that seawater is the clearest indicator of a creator God, because the seawater and the body fluids are so similar. In fact, the Navy in the war would transfuse with seawater if the person needed blood. So they're all illustrations to show how close it is. So the kidneys also need water, and they need that whole salt. The kidneys need exercise. Ellen White states that exercise strengthens and tones the internal organs. So we don't think of that much, but while you're exercising, every step you take, the kidneys are moving. It's strengthening and toning them. Exercise also increases the circulation of the blood to the kidneys, and the kidneys are filtering the blood. And that also explains why the kidneys must be warm. So no wonder when I was in Scotland 2 weeks ago, I was excited to find a kilt that was not too expensive. Because, you know, with a kilt, you'll have a pleat that big on the outside, but the inside is that much, and it's 100% wool. So I've probably got about 4 layers of wool on my kidneys at the moment. The kidneys must be kept warm. Because if they get cold, then you're not going to get the blood going into that area. And remember, then the kidneys aren't able to filter the blood as they should. Your kidneys also need not only warmth. Oh, we've got the water up there. It looked too little for me, but I use that one's water. Only microscopic waste can come out of these three. The largest piece of weight comes out of your colon, and the colon has a mind of its own. If you've got diarrhea and you tell it to stop, it won't, will it? And if you've got constipation and you tell it to go, it won't, will it? I'm reading a book at the moment. It's called The Second Brain, which is the colon. The colon must not be irritated. That will hurt it. It needs stimulation. So what stimulates the colon? What stimulates the colon is fiber. Fiber does two things. Fiber stimulates peristalsis, which is the constant movement through the colon. But the fiber also sweeps the colon. We're going to be looking at that in more detail when we go on our journey. We're going to go on a journey starting at the mouth through the whole of the gastrointestinal tract. Proverbs 14 verse 6, that's Proverbs 14 verse 6 says, "A scorner seeketh wisdom and finds it not, but knowledge is easy to him that understands." And that's why I believe as medical missionaries, we need to show the people how the different organs work, because when you know how they work, you automatically have the knowledge on how to treat them. So if you look at the structure of the colon, there are all, I'm going to be drawing a big gastrointestinal tract for you when we do the gut. It has all these grooves in it and they need to be swept, and fibre sweeps it. So the fibre in food is not digestible. It's a leftover from digestion and it has a purpose. And the highest fibre food really is your vegetables. Your vegetables. Fruit, of course, has fiber too. But remember this, and I think you'll want to write this down. Vegetables are high in fiber, high in minerals, low in sugars. Fruit, high in fiber, high in sugar, low in minerals. Can you see the difference? And that's why when someone has a yeast problem, when someone has a cancer, we go a little bit away from the fruits and go more to vegetables. So that you've always can answer why. Why are these things so? Yeah?
But Ellen White talks about having a fruit cleanse.
Well, yes.
As far as I remember, it's in connection with over brain work.
A fruit cleanse would be good, but if that person's got a yeast problem, it's not good. They can go to the savoury fruits. You know what the savoury fruits are? Tomato, cucumber, avocado. Aubergine or eggplant, zucchini, pumpkin. So they have high fibre and they're classified as fruit because the classification of a fruit is it has its seed in it. But they're what we call savoury fruits. The reason why fruit and vegetables don't mix well is because the vegetables are low sugar and the fruit are high sugar. So you get a bit of a war going on there. But those savoury fruits, the good news is they can go with vegetables and they can go with fruit. And the only reason they can go with vegetables is because they're so low in sugars. Traditionally, it has been acknowledged that the fruit are the cleansers and the vegetables are the healers. But we have got so many health conditions today that require less sweet. The diabetic does well with less sweet. The person who's overweight does best with less sweet. The cancer patient does better with less sweet. The person with the yeast problems does better with less sweet. Can you see that? Oh, we do need vitamins, and they are in abundance in the vegetables. Mm-hmm. We're going to have a question session in a minute. So the colon needs fiber to be swept and to stimulate peristalsis. The colon also needs water. One of the main functions of the colon is to take water out so stools are formed. Because when the contents of the contents of the gut goes into the large intestine, it's liquid. It's like what we call diarrhea. But as it goes through the ascending colon, transverse colon, descending colon, water's taken out, so stools are formed. So if a person's dehydrated, more water can be taken out than should be taken out. Then you're left with rabbit pellets and cement. Is that right? And when we go on our journey through the gut, we'll explore constipation and we'll explore irritable bowel, Crohn's disease in more detail. What the colon also needs to be an effective organ of elimination, it needs exercise. Exercise moves the colon. Exercise gently massages the colon. And exercise increases the blood supply to the colon. So exercise is vital. Colorectal cancer is about number two killer in America today. This is in a nation who don't hardly eat any fiber, who drink sodas and teas and coffees instead of water, who rarely exercise. So no wonder. And something else that stimulates the colon is laughter. Proverbs 17:22 states that a merry heart doeth good like a medicine. But a broken spirit dries up the bones. I'd like to say a broken spirit can dry up the colon. You know, children laugh 125 times a day, so should we. Teach yourself to laugh more. My little grandson was going to bed one night. He was three. His name's Sonny. And he called Mum back. And she said, "What is it?" He said, "I've just found a new laugh." She said, "What is it?" And he went, that was his new laugh. So he's still making people laugh. But the colon also needs the proper position. And the proper position is squatting. And I'm going to explain and draw this in detail when we go through our gut. But when I went to Singapore, when I went to Africa, when I went to India, when I went to Malaysia, you'll find there the European toilets, which you sit on, and then there's the local toilets, which is a hole in the ground. Mm-hmm. And it's all tiled and flush, but it's squatting. Mm-hmm. And the science today shows, where's our BHSC method? History shows us this. Science discreetly doesn't talk about it much. I mean, the Bible doesn't talk about it much. The science now shows that there's a muscle in the last part of the colon that just loops up the last part of the colon, and when you squat, it relaxes. So when you squat, it opens up the colon, takes all pressure off the anus, which means it can prevent and even help to heal hemorrhoids. But we'll look at that in detail when we do our journey through the gastrointestinal tract. There's one more tiny little organ of elimination, and that's the tongue. And when people are fasting, they can wake up in the morning and their tongue can feel quite bad. But we should never clean our teeth when we wake up. No. Because what's present in our mouth in the morning is vitamin B12. Vitamin B12 is a bacteria and it sort of builds up a little bit in the teeth. So there's first glass of water, you're getting a little bit of B12. The time to clean your teeth is after the meal. And you clean your teeth after the meal to get any residue food out of your teeth. Because if it stays there, it'll start to rot because of the cycle of life. And the bacteria that's produced can start eating away at your enamel. But there is something that we suggest our guests do, and as a rule, I usually do this every morning, and it's oil pulling. And that's putting a spoonful of coconut oil in your mouth and swishing. Swish for 10 seconds, rest for 10 seconds, swish for 10 seconds. The reason it's called oil pulling is for a few reasons. Number one, it pulls waste out of the tongue. Number two, it pulls waste out of the glands under the tongue. Number three, it pulls waste out of the blood vessels under the tongue. But there's two other areas it can pull waste, and that is the sinus. I've known people with sinus problems to oil pull, and when they're finished oil pulling, oh, they said they blow their nose quite a bit. It seems to pull up a little bit further. And people with lung conditions, so they've got bronchitis, after they've oil pulled, they cough up a couple of lumps. How nice. I've known people to conquer gingivitis, that's infection of the gums, bleeding gums by oil pulling two or three times a day. It strengthens the gums, it helps to clean the teeth, because coconut, when it connects with your bacteria, releases antibacterial elements. So in the jar, the coconut oil is not antibacterial. But when it connects with even the bacteria in your skin, it becomes antibacterial in your mouth. Yes?
So that means you drink a glass of water first when you get up, and then you do oil pulling.
Yeah, I usually do a few glasses of water, a little bit of salt, glass of water. Then I usually do about 3 glasses of water. Then I do my exercise, and when I come back, I have another water. And then I oil pull while I prepare my breakfast. And that's the way to do it, is make an appointment with yourself as to where you're going to do it. It's like exercise. If you don't make an appointment, you'll never do it. Yeah. You can do it later, you'll never do it.
But if the tongue is eliminating waste, drinking water first is not washing down the waste inside.
It doesn't matter if you do, because our gastrointestinal tract is a hollow tube. So if you wash it down there, it's just going to come out the other end.
But you do not swallow the oil.
No. Because oil in the stomach can start digestion, plus there's a fair bit of waste in that. And what you do, not down the plug hole, because you'll block up your plumbing, go and release it out on the grass. And the microorganisms that live in the soil will happily deal with it. Mm-hmm. And then you rinse your mouth a couple of times and let it out.
How would it affect the lungs, though, if you have it in your mouth? You
mentioned that's very interesting. How does it do that? But you test it yourself. Often when you oil pull, you have a feeling to release. But what we've got to remember, our whole body's connected. Same blood that goes through our lungs, goes through our mouth, goes through every part of our body.